Okay, good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming, and those of you that are from out of town, welcome. Those of you from in town, congratulations. You plowed through the construction and traffic to get here. D.C. seems to be under quite a bit of construction these days. Everywhere you turn, there's something, hence the hole in the ground outside the hotel here this morning. I was asked to come this morning and talk a little bit about the animal disease program that we have here in the district. And so with that, I just probably need to give you a little bit of background. The animal program here in the district falls under the Department of Health, and so it's one of many programs in the Department of Health. And my capacity with that program is to serve as the chief veterinary medical officer for that program. So as you can imagine, in the Department of Health, we have nursing, we have home health care, dentistry, medicine, all the different groups, and the animal program is one of those. In addition to that, I serve as the executive director to the veterinary board, and the board does have a position with the state boards, and so we hold a position, a voting position with the state boards, and we attend the national meeting there every year as well. So this is a town that's full of controversy, and everyone likes a debate here, and as you can imagine, there's no difference in the Department of Health. And the ongoing debate, similar to some of the debates that happen on the Hill that go on for days and all hours of the night, the ongoing debate that we have is how do we partition and allocate resources to the animal program when so much is weighted towards the human side of things, okay? And so that's a valid concern. So one of the interesting things that that we have to offer is that so much of the resources and so much of the energy is devoted towards the human side of things, but yet, as a director of the Department of Health tells all of us, out of every 10 phone calls that his office gets in a day, 9 of those are animal related. So that makes us feel good because it helps us come to the surface a little bit better. And when you say, well, why would 9 out of 10 calls be related to animals? You know, part of it is because we live in a very densely populated part of the country. Animals are an extension, at least in this town, an often extension to the family. And people have a big concern for the well-being of animals. And so often the calls that come in are related to a stray dog, a feral cat population, a neighbor being concerned about the care of an animal next door. And we sort of joke because the people are often more concerned about the animals than, their aged mother-in-law that's in the nursing home, okay? So the resources are always of an issue, and one of the issues that we really have to bring to the table is that the animal program, though it's probably the smallest staffed program in the district in terms of in the Department of Health, it has probably the largest set of responsibilities, and that's often common with animal-related things. You know, the overarching responsibilities are broad, and yet the resources and the staffing is always small. So with that, I'd like to just share with you guys some of the things that the program does so you can have an appreciation for what all's involved and at least, understand a little bit why some of those resources are such an issue in terms of trying to decide who gets different resources. So the Animal Disease Control Division, again, primary mission to protect and or primary purpose of protect and regulation for all creatures great and small. And I say that because we think in terms of the district, small space, what could there possibly be here? Mostly dogs and cats. And the truth is, as I'll show you, we deal with the entire breadth of animals from puppies to elephants, okay? The mission that the group has is to prevent and control the spread of disease typically zoonotic diseases is obviously the most concern from animals to humans, and we do that through investigations, licensing, and enforcement. And our interest there is to serve the district both to protect the public health of the residents as well as the visitors. So an overview of the services, and I'll go through these a little bit. In the talk, I'll go through each one of them, so we'll just give you a quick overview. We deal with animal control, dangerous dogs, special events, the Board of Veterinary Medicine, veterinary facilities, pet shops, hobbies. We do a fair amount of work in surveillance, both in West Nile and in rabies. We put on vaccination clinics. We have issues with licensing of animals in the district, animal emergency preparedness. Okay, so let me give you a little bit of a background of who we consider our clients, who are the stakeholders here in the district. For starters, there's roughly 200 veterinarians in the district, and those are veterinarians that are licensed through the Department of Health in Washington, D.C. The breadth of those are a combination of practicing veterinarians as well as federal and state veterinarians. Okay. There's approximately 600 residents here in the district, compared to 15 million tourists that we have that come through. As far as domestic animals go, we see roughly 160,000 dogs, 180,000 cats, and an unknown number of what we call pocket pet companion animals. In addition to that, because of the way the district is set up, we're fortunate enough to have a lot of green space here, and we have lots of parks and wooded areas, and so with that comes the whole gamut of wildlife that we appreciate in the district. So again, you know, when we think about what goes on in the district, you know, to the right here, we see that we've got dogs, cats, and some small pocket pets. Those are pretty standard in any metropolitan area. But in addition to that, we do see this whole gamut of wildlife, and we appreciate those animals being here. We want to protect them, but at the same capacity, we want to try to minimize as much interaction between the human and wildlife population as we can in terms of the things that can go wrong with those different groups. So let's start with the animal care and control group. The animal care and control group is open 24 hours a day. They house approximately 10,000 animals a year in the facility, the holding facility. That facility is a shelter that makes every effort that it can to adopt out pets that are appropriate for adoption. Okay, and they respond to approximately 15,000 field calls in a year's time. So these guys are on the road. They're traveling day and night, responding to calls anywhere from, you know, somebody reporting a stray animal to wildlife that may be in someone's garage or someone's attic, different issues that, you know, come with the wildlife population. One of the big issues that they deal with are dangerous dogs. There's just a few pictures up here of unfortunate results of dangerous dogs in the district. And like any other metropolitan area, you're always going to have some animals that rise to that title, which is an unfortunate title, but you know, we deal with it both in terms of, are they dangerous for towards other animals, are they dangerous to people, and essentially the two go hand in hand. Okay. Special events. This is where we see the whole gamut of animals. The district, of course, being the nation's capital, lots of interest in people coming here for all sorts of events. We see everything from little local neighborhood parades to major national events, hence the the years when there's an election, all of the horses that come in for those parades. We have the Ringling Circus that comes in once a year. That's always a big one for us in terms of regulating that population of animals in the district. We just finished this past week with the Washington International Horse Show, held at the Verizon Center. That's a fiasco trying to get that many animals shipped in and out of the district and on time for their classes. And we shut down F Street there by the Verizon Center, and there's temporary stabling. The horses are all out at PG Equestrian Center in Maryland. They all have to be shipped in. It is a major production to pull off some of these events, especially when you're dealing with, you know, this size, you know, of an animal. The Board of Veterinary Examiners, again, I sit on that board and assist them as the executive director. And that group regulates the practice of veterinary medicine within the district. Okay, so essentially, we're establishing and enforcing policies to ensure a quality of veterinary practice within the district. We like to see ourselves as setting clear guidelines for professional conduct and a standard of care, so that we at least have a minimum standard of care that we expect everyone to adhere to. And we investigate any veterinary complaints. And unfortunately, as with any professional group, there's always going to be some level of complaints. We're very fortunate in that the number of complaints that come through our office and through the veterinary board is minimal compared to what we see with some of the other groups. So once again, we sort of use some of those things to assist in allocate in fighting for some of the resources that we're interested in getting. We're part of the licensing process, and they put out a yearly newsletter just to update the practicing veterinarians in the district as to new things that are going on and updates. Veterinary facilities. This, again, is through the Department of Health, and basically we're looking at all facilities that involve housing of animals, so veterinary hospital and animal shelters, and our interest here is to inspect those. We do routine inspections, and we are looking for a standard of care for the animals in terms of how they're taken care of at the facility and how they're housed, the safety of the facility and the equipment used in the facility, and the conditions of that facility. So once again, setting some minimum standards that we expect that all animals that are involved in any of these different facilities, you know, have given to them. Because real estate in the district is limited, a lot of the facilities that we have here are actually homes that have been converted to veterinary offices, and some of those I give lots of credit to the architects because they are creative in how they can take a row house and turn it into a veterinary facility. It's amazing. But those are challenges that you would not have when you're starting with a freestanding building, especially if you were building it from scratch. So. Inspection of private property. This is always one that gets everybody riled. We, as the Department of Health, again, are looking at trying to minimize encounters with wildlife and the public for a number of reasons. And so one of the jobs that we have is to go around and basically observe neighborhoods and look into any complaints that we have. Trash in the yard is always a nuisance and attracts wildlife, so we are, you know, endlessly after people to keep that picked up. We have big hearts in the city that are feeding the feral cat populations, and we've actually established feral cat population programs where those cats stay in that area. We take them all in, spay and neuter them, and return them. But again, that's stemming from big hearts with people that want to take care of animals that they see, you know, running wild outside. Another big one is debris and standing water. We are always interested in people keeping their yards and their properties clean to minimize space for wildlife to want to set up shop. Because if we can minimize that up front, it takes care of a lot of problems on the backside that then we don't, you know, essentially have to address. As I said earlier, we are involved with some surveillance programs, both West Nile and rabies. The West Nile program is a program which we essentially go out and capture mosquitoes. Those mosquitoes are then sent to a lab. They're analyzed, and when we find positive West Nile positive mosquitoes, we alert those neighborhoods as to where we found them, so that they can sort of be on alert that, you know, there's a possibility of some of this virus in their area. We also then do surveillance in the properties and make sure there's not a lot of standing water, and if there is, we ask people to get some of that cleaned up. Okay. Rabies surveillance, obviously another big issue for us. Luckily, we don't see a ton of it, but essentially we're testing and collaborating with the district, the federal agencies, and community groups. And our interest there, of course, is to prevent the spread of this virus. And we spend a lot of time educating residents about the safety with animals, both domestic and wild animals. Okay. Just a little bit of numbers here for you. This year, so far to date, we've seen 13 positive cases of rabies found in bats and 7 in raccoons, so we've got a total of 20. Really minimal numbers, you know, if you will, compared to some other areas of the country, and fortunately not in our domestic animal population. Okay. With that, again, we spend a lot of time educating folks, and so one of the things that the district offers is vaccination clinics. And so in the springtime, this is sort of a fun event, but there's 8 wards here in the district, and we set up a vaccine clinic in each of those wards, and essentially we're offering to the public free vaccines for both dogs and cats, and we spend a lot of time answering questions for those folks and a lot of time educating them about the importance of vaccinations and how it helps to minimize the spread of disease both amongst animals and amongst the spread from animals to people. So just a quick a number here, we served 465 residents this year, roughly 700 vaccines for dogs and 200 vaccines for cats. Okay, and as you can see from this slide, you know, they're busy. These have pretty good turnout. There's a lot of activity going on, and so we spend quite a bit of time making sure that these run smoothly, because they turn into kind of a festival with a lot of animals and a lot of potential for issue. Okay. Another big program that the district is involved with is emergency preparedness. And as you can imagine, the district here, being that it's the nation's capital, is unfortunately a big target for man-made disaster. But as we've seen this year with earthquakes, which are not typical to this area, we're also prone to natural disaster. And so we do spend some time educating people, and we have a plan in place that's through the district as far as being prepared for a natural disaster or a man-made disaster. And that plan is responsible for sheltering the companion animals. Okay, it's responsible for search and rescue of animals that someone might be looking for, and responsible for recovery of those individuals. Okay. As far as what the district is doing in terms of its future, we have a long wish list, and again, resources are always of issue, but the main ones that we're interested in are to make substantial changes to the animal laws, specifically dangerous dog laws and some of the supporting laws. And so we spend quite a bit of time really hashing out where our laws are and where we want them to be. And as many of you probably know, a lot of the animal laws in this country are antiquated. They don't have a lot of teeth to them. And so they may be on the books, but when it comes time to actually doing something about them, often it's very difficult to get that accomplished. So being the nation's capital, we've set out to be a leader in this as opposed to just, you know, a follower. And we're trying to really set, you know, the bar high so that we can be available for some of the other states to call on us and ask us, you know, how we're handling some of this. And I think we're probably in the best place to do that. We've got big changes coming in the animal control contract. So that's basically the group that goes out and houses all the animals at the shelter and those that go out on calls. We're trying to get them a lot more power, if you will, policing power, and therefore they'll hopefully have a little more authority and, again, a little bit more backing when they go to enforce some of those issues, okay? Regulations for commercial breeders and some of the commercial facilities. Again, we spend quite a bit of time with the attorneys, and we hash through all of the laws that are on the books, and we are basically rewriting all of those to give them, again, more structure and more of a backbone, if you will, to enforce some of the policies that we're interested in. And then lastly, a huge push that we were after is the need for a more modern facility. Unfortunately, the facility that we have, though it served its purpose, is fairly antiquated in itself. And so we are pushing right now with the mayor's office to find us a space and create, you know, an area where we can put really a first-class animal sheltering facility in place. That has its own set of challenges, which are far beyond anything I ever imagined we'd be up against. But again, real estate's a priority here, and it's difficult to find space. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I didn't know if you wanted them now or at the end.
If we could take one question, but go ahead. Just one, please. Yes.
I'm wondering, you mentioned that you work really tightly with public health. You're based there. Do you have any regulations or for reporting animal diseases in public health? So if the veterinarian or lab diagnosed an animal disease, is there any reporting of that to public health?
We serve the same capacity as, essentially my role is the same as a state veterinary role here, a state veterinarian, so yes, if we have issues that need to be reported, they are reported. Fortunate for us, we don't deal with many of the livestock-related issues that you'd have in some of the states in terms of, you know, just by the geographics here, but we have had some West Nile cases and rabies cases, and those do get reported.
If you don't mind, I will cut off the questions out so we can get on time.
Okay.
There should be plenty of time at the end to any questions. And one of the things I didn't do you justice is, one of the things we always try and do when we have these meetings is take advantage of some of the local talent. And that's what Dr. Dale did when he invited you. So thank you very much.
Thank you.